Okay, so then the next item is offering of bhoga, bhogarpana. So we were discussing how that is working. So one is performing achman and offering prayers to the spiritual master, offering obeisances. Then we enter the deity room. Whenever we enter the deity room, then this principle of knocking, making some sound. Krishna being a person, he likes to know what's going on. Right? I mean, as Sarvajna, he knows what's going on. But the rasa is happening between him and the devotees when he takes the mood of when he's not knowing what's going on. Right? So even though he knows what's going on, he allows us to act in such a way as if he doesn't know what's going on. So we come, we knock on the door, then he knows someone's coming, like that. Otherwise we just walk in, and then, you know, he's not prepared, he's doing something else, then it won't be so nice. So he takes that mood that we can, so we can render service to him, right? The whole idea is the Archamurti has come just to allow us to do this kind of service. I see it's coming farther south, right? Because otherwise it never came this time. So so in here, then, knocking, clapping, ringing a bell, and like outside, you can hang some bells or something outside the door. Whole idea is then he knows someone's coming, right? This is the whole point. We consider others. We want to go somewhere. We want to do someplace, but we're going to do that with other people. So the whole idea is that the other person is there. He must be considered. Whoever it is, they must be considered. And this establishes proper relationships. If we just think everything's just going to go the way we expect it, then it is not, it's not a great, I mean, we may think it's great, but if it is so great, then why is it Krishna takes the mood where he's not sarvajna or all-knowing? He takes the mood of mugdata, where he doesn't know what's going on. He's just absorbed in what's happening as it's happening. Right? In other words, if everything went just the way you wanted it, how you thought it just happened, that was the greatest thing, then Vaikuntha Lila would be the topmost Lila. Right? Because there in Vaikuntha, Krishna's fully manifesting the mood of I am God, I am the controller, I am the Supreme Person, I am the knower of everything. Like that would be the Supreme. Because even when you go to Dwarka, Mathura, Ayodhya, then there's that mood of where he's just performing his pastimes, where Yoga Maya puts everybody under her illusion. And to some degree or another, he doesn't, is not absorbed in his position as the Supreme Lord, and neither are his devotees. To some degree, but not so much. And then higher than that, you go to Vrindavan, where there's total... Oh, what? No. No, we didn't cut those. That was, we cut the branches. But in Vrindavan, then there's that total mood of not caring about these things. Krishna's God or not, who cares? You know? It's like Mother Jashoda looks in Krishna's mouth, and she sees that there's some... to see if there's dirt inside. So when she looks inside, though, the whole universe is there. Cosmic creation and everything's happening in there. And she becomes bewildered because, well, how does she render a service? It's not like, oh, here's God, you know, okay, that's just what I've been looking for. And then offering prayers and standing there with folded hands and all this kind of stuff. Right? Like you see Devaki and Vasudev, they want God as their son. They have God as his son. And when he arrives, they offer their prayers, they recognize him as the Supreme Lord, they bow down, they do all those things. Then they say, it won't be safe for you to stay like this because there is that mood of parental rasa that they're supposed to protect. That's the meaning. So you take this your form as a baby, and then the whole their whole rasa starts. So that he's God and standing there with four arms and all that, it doesn't bewilder them at all. That's their whole point. They wanted God as their son. So it doesn't bother them. Their rasa goes on fine. Just, okay, now we've offered our prayers and that, so now let's now get into the rasa, that flavor. So it's not a disturbance for them. Right? But we see that with Mother Yashoda, then Krishna shows the universal form, shows all these things that she's God, that he's God, and then she's bewildered. Why is she bewildered? Because now how does she serve? You know? Okay, here's God, but so now what am I supposed to do? You know? So she's not worshiping Krishna because he's God. She's just worshiping Krishna because he's the nicest person that there is, the nicest son there is. So that is the difference. So if that was the case, that everything going the way you want is the best, then why are the Vrindavan pastimes said to be the best? Because it's not the best. It's quite a good best, but it's not like Dwarka is perfect, Mathura is more perfect, and Vrindavan is most perfect, right? So from this perfect of Dwarka expands the Vaikuntha planets. Like that. So then, that would be. So for that reason, then we have to consider others. Right? If we just consider that how I want it, I just march in how I like and do this and that how I like and all that, then it's more of an impersonal kind of thing. Is we want to control everything, but not with people really involved. We don't consider them. Because even Krishna, as Vaikunthapati, he knows everything, knows everyone's heart and all that, but he still reciprocates with the devotees. Right? So even this, the controller mood, it's still done within the realm of rasa. It's still pleasant and nice. But the tendency in the material world is we want to control everything, but not consider others. Right? It should just go the way I want it. And if they comply, then they're great people. And if they don't comply, then, you know, we have so many, you know, how you say, adverbs and what do you call them? Adjectives and these kind of things that we can say about the person, special nouns and, you know, other kinds of terminologies we'll have. And to describe their, you know, their personality, their character, their lineage, their features, their, you know, tastes and, you know, their lifestyle, whatever. It's just like this. So the point is that we have to establish proper relationships, right? So we see here, even in entering the deity room, this point is brought out, right? Philosophical point is you get into the spiritual realm by, through the spiritual master, right? That by his grace, you're able to go. Shri Vigrahara Dhana Nityanana Shringaratan Mandira Majanado Uktasya Bhaktangs Chanatyunjatopi Vande Guru Sri Charanaravinda. By his, he is worshipping the deity and engages the devotees in doing this also. So why? Shakshad Dhari Toina Samasta Shastre represents the Supersoul. We want to go back to Godhead, Krishna sends us the spiritual master. Right? then Krishna sees how you deal with the spiritual master. You deal properly with him, then Krishna knows, okay, you'll deal properly with me. But Krishna doesn't just leave it up to chance. We say, I want to surrender, I this, I that, so many things, but then Krishna wants to see. And he watches, how do you deal with the spiritual master? You know? Spiritual master can't remember a shloka, so do you think badly? Right? Oh, he can't remember a shloka, he's not perfect, he's not absolute, the topmost and most perfect and wonderful. Oh, spiritual master got sick, he's not perfect, he's not absolute. You know? Spiritual master has, you know, physical breakdown. Oh, he's not perfect, he's not absolute. So if that's the mood, then Krishna knows this person's not very sincere, not very serious. Therefore, Krishna doesn't get, you know, keeps the relationship quite formal. He's in the heart, and the modes and nature are there, and through his energies, he gets things done. But when he sees that one understands the spiritual master is a person, the devotees is people, then he can understand that you actually can relate to him, Krishna, as a person. Like that. So that's how it works. So one has to understand the absolute platform. Otherwise, Krishna, he does things. He comes in, it's time to get up in the morning, he's still in bed. Mother Yashoda has to come, and Purnamasi comes, and other people come like that, and to wake him up. And, you know, she figures, oh, he's so tired. She doesn't think, well, it's his God, and he's tired in the morning, can't get out of bed, what's going on here? You know? Vaikuntha, I mean, you see in Dwarka, no, bang, he's out of bed. No one wakes him up. The cock crows, bang, he's out of bed. Queens want him to stay in bed longer, forget it, he's up. Gets up, does his whole morning duties, this, that, does everything, and then at the right time he goes off to, you know, goes off to the palace, leaves his houses, you know, leaves 16,108 palaces, and then as he walks down the different roads, and then they all start meeting each other, and slowly until, you know, you just have one Krishna, right? And then Krishna comes back in the evening. And then as the roads fork, it goes into two. As those ones fork, then it goes into four. Like that, and keeps until then he goes to all the 16,108 palaces. So he manifests those things. So if that's what you're expecting, fine. But then that takes a whole different kind of mood and surrender and dealings. The spiritual master's dealings with you will be 101% formal. He's not going to deal in any of your problems. He'll be just sitting in his place, come out, deal, go back. You know? These are the things. That is also the way the Vaikuntha worship works. That's the way it works with God. That's the way it works with his devotees. But you want to worship the Lord in his Vrindavan mood, then Krishna has to see what, you know, do you, are you so absorbed in the externals, in the ritual, in the vidhi, that if there's any seeming difficulty in that, meaning the external practice of the vidhi, are you have a disturbance? Do you have a problem? Right? Or do you expect that this is a devotee, this is a person, you know, anybody can make a mistake. Because the absolute platform is not whether you make material mistakes. The absolute platform is whether you understand Krishna and you see Krishna in whatever is going on. And this is the principle of iron and fire. When iron is in the fire, it's fire. If it's out of the fire, it's iron. You put it back in the fire, it's iron, it's fire. So Krishna wants to see, do you understand this principle, this definition of absolute? Because that is the Gaudiya Vaishnava, achinta beda beda tattva. Very fine things are going on all at once. Perfect, but doesn't mean that materially how we expect materially everything should go. That is the perfection. We have to understand, who makes the definition of perfection? Us or God? Who makes this definition? We've decided, perfect memory, you know, never gets sick, never misses his airplane, you know, whatever it may be, that if that's what, then who made that list? I don't see that in the, I've never read that in the Bhagavatam. Right? I've never read that in the Bhagavatam. You don't read it anywhere. People offering prayers to Brahma. Oh, you're so perfect, you remember all the Oh, you're so perfect, you never missed just, you know. You're always here on time. Right? Lord Brahma, he's a pure devotee. And he stole his cows and calves. Even he didn't quite understand what was going on. It's the Lord's, it's going on in the pastime. Right? We have no problem with that pastime. But the Madhvas, who are Vaikuntha worshippers, they don't accept that pastime. They say this pastime is an interpolation. Because they say Brahma is perfect. He could never make such a mistake. So they have a slightly different definition of perfect. Still coming from God, but within the realm of Vaikuntha only. So they don't accept this Brahma Vimohan Lila. But we do. We don't see any problem in it. So we know that these kind of mistakes may be made. Especially material. What is the point? You have matter, and you're dealing with matter. There's something problem in the matter. That's all. Spiritual master doesn't have a strong physical body. That's not an imperfection. Is it? That fifth verse of the Upadeshamrita. What is that? All I remember is Buddha Faina Funkar. Gangam? Say again. Yeah. Otherwise, the point is given, is that in the Ganga there's bubbles and foam. So if you take it, there's an imperfection there, you'll never understand the Ganga. So in the same ways, we cannot apply our material concepts of perfection on the spiritual master either. We have to take what the Shastra says is the perfection. Someone sees them, they chant, they can tell you the conclusions of the Shastras. You know, they see things and everything in relationship to Krishna. These things are there. These are the perfections. And there's also different levels of these perfections. Like that. There's so many levels of these perfections. So like that, one has to approach. So here, Krishna then takes the mood of just like a human being. And here we get to practice dealing with him as a person. Right? We're going to enter his room. We knock first. We make some sound. He knows we're coming. Not just he's God, he knows everything, so then, you know, I just walk in as I like. If God knows everything, why do you have to go at all? He knows everything. Everything belongs to him, so there's nothing out here you can offer. You know? You belong to him, so, you know, that's already understood and all the paraphernalia. Why? So I don't have to bother going. I can just sit in my room all day. But the point is he gives us opportunity for us to do something, to relate with him as a person. So we see, here he's a person, we knock on the door, then we go in. Right? This is how it works. It gives us that opportunity. So we have to give up our false ideas that this isn't important, because either God, he knows everything, I don't have to then deal. So then why make an offering to him for foodstuffs? Lakshmi sahasra sata sambhama sevhimanam. He's got so many hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis rendering service. He doesn't need our bhog offering. They're bathing him, they're dressing him, they're doing everything. You know? So they don't need our service. But he's giving us that opportunity to do. And what it is he's a person, you're a person, and we can show our affection for him. Right? So here's one of the opportunities to practice this. Knocking on the door, making some arrangement for him. Right? Dealing with him as a person. What would please him? What would be nice? How to better make the situation? Like you see, it's many times. You have the deity, you stand in the temple room and look at the deities. Fabulous darshan. Wonderful dress, altar is perfect, the curtains are wonderful. The facade on the front where the deity room is wonderful. Everything is wonderful. You go inside the deity room and stand back where the deities are and look at that facade on the inside. You know, or around the deity room where no one can see, means in the darshan. And you see unkept, mess, dirty, unpainted, even sometimes unfinished. You know, they didn't even properly plaster it or paint it, or it's falling apart. Because the idea is, well, no one will see. If you ask, why didn't you do that? Then what does the answer be? No one will see it. Oh, I see. So no one means no people. So that means God is not people. Right? So it's impersonal. So these impersonal concepts of God's not a person, or I'm the controller, so whatever I want done, I get done, so therefore now I'm going to go see God, I don't have to bother, you know, knocking this and that, because I'm going to get done what I want to get done. Rather than, he's a person, I have to consider him. Right? I have to knock on the door so that he knows I'm coming. Just like if I want to go to someone else's room, I don't just barge in. I'll knock or call or something like that, unless the relationship is such, whatever it is. But in any case, that natural, you know, consideration for others is there. So this is shown here. That is the purpose of it. Right? So here we go there. Then we go into the deity room after, you know, we've offered our obeisances, we've knocked on the door, rung the bell, we've chanted the names of the deities. Then we go in and we present ourselves there, clean the area, arrange the eating places, you know, wipe off the table surfaces, and we go out, wash our hands, right? Here it's mentioning taking the blessings of the guru. It's either one can bring the plate and then do this, or do this first and then bring the plate. Here he's got it, taking the blessings of the spiritual master, then bringing the plate. But point, before one starts, this must be accomplished. Yes.
Last night in the Bhagavad Gita Council meeting, there was a discussion about the guru. How should a disciple act when the guru doesn't follow the regular principles anymore and he just comes?
What has that got to do with this topic? Yeah.
The link is broken. How do you react, like, with the person?
In other words, if you were a pujari and you went in to do the offering and you were going to get the blessings of the guru, but your particular spiritual master might have...
Oh, it was in relationship specific to this?
Yeah.
Or it was just in general? Oh, so pujaris who the spiritual master has left, but they're still doing the puja, like that. Generally, the recommendation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then his recommendation is you take shelter of somebody else. Because the essential point that one is getting from the Diksha Guru is one is the right to do puja. because diksha is a matter of pancharatra. What we're being initiated into is pancharatric diksha. Like that. That, then we have the right to do the deity worship. Like that. Because we're not pure, we identify with the body. So that body and the mind have to be purified by the system of pancha samskar, the five different samskars, to purify the body and the mind, intelligence, all these things, to bring it to a platform in which we can properly engage in the Lord's service. So that right is being given by the diksha. Now, but the main element that takes us back to Godhead is instruction. Right? The ritual, the diksha itself, is just a connection. Right? It's just like you can take the plug and plug it into the wall, but if there's no electricity, okay, you plugged into the wall. Jai. But if there's no electricity, there's no real benefit going on. Of course, you don't have a loose plug going around the room. Now it's plugged into the wall. Right? But the current must come through. So that current is the instruction. Right? It says, Om Agyana Timirandasya Jnananjala Shalakaya. The shalaka. Shalaka is a special instrument for removing a cataract from the eye. It's a Vedic instrument. How they'll take the cataract off the eye. It's called a shalaka. So this instrument, so the Jnananjana, the ointment of Jnan is the shalaka that removes the cataract. It means of our vision that we have material vision. It removes that material vision, we're able to see Krishna. Right? It doesn't say Dikshanjana. By Diksha, the Anjana of Diksha, now the material existence has been removed. Right? This is a very important point. This makes the differentiation between Vaishnavas and Smartas. Smartas, it's the Diksha. Caste Goswamis, it's the Diksha. Most of your Apasampradayas, it's the Diksha. Bona fide Gaudiya Vaishnavas, it's the Siksha. That's the essential point. So now, so Bhaktivinoda mentions that if you've lost the Diksha Guru, then what the most, urgent thing to regain is the Siksha. Because that is what is maintaining the life, that is what is giving us the inspiration, the direction, removing the ignorance from the heart. So he recommends that you take a shelter of another advanced devotee. That's the essential point. You understand? So that is there. Now, if one hasn't come to that point, then one just follows the process that anyone who is looking for a spiritual master does. You take shelter of Srila Prabhupada. Because the spiritual master anyway is going to give you the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. He's going to point out to you Srila Prabhupada's instructions. But it is his business personally to see that you understand them. Right? So now you just take shelter of Srila Prabhupada and you do through that. But you understand, you're not his Diksha disciple, you're a Siksha disciple. Everybody in ISKCON, anyone who accepts Srila Prabhupada is his Siksha disciple. Right? Narottam is the Siksha disciple of Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. Right? In the line. His Diksha Guru is Lokanath. And Vishwanath, his Siksha Guru is Narottam. His Diksha Guru happens to be the third generation after Narottam. So he's the fourth generation. There's three generations between Narottam and Vishwanath. But that's how we bring the parampara. Because that siksha has been taken. Vishwanath perfectly exemplifies the teachings of Narottam. He's taken his teachings as his life and soul. So he's his siksha disciple. But under no circumstance is he his diksha disciple. Because, as I said, only smartas and apasampradayas consider that the diksha is the essential element. So therefore, if there's no diksha connection, then it's useless. Right? It's the siksha that you're looking for. Right? Sukadev Goswami spoke to Parikshit Maharaj. Do we see any initiation ceremony going on there? Any yajnas and swahas and all these kind of things happening? No. But now, is Parikshit is not Sukadev's disciple? But is based on what? Siksha. Rupa and Sanatan, they spoke to Lord Chaitanya. Did you see any yajnas and ritual, pancharatric rituals going on? No. Siksha. Of course, it must be pointed out at this point that we're dealing with Uttamadhikaris here. So they don't need the pancharatric rituals and initiation to support their, to keep them from falling into sinful life. Means a holy name can keep you out of that as long as you take shelter. Right? You don't take shelter, what will happen? Because it's just you sit and chant all day. That's the rule. Chant all day, talk philosophy with the other Mahabhagavats. And that's Bhagavat Marg. Discuss it with them, tell it to others. So all you're doing is just chanting all day the holy name, the Lord's glories, hearing them, chanting them. Bus, that's it. There's nothing else. That is the Bhagavat Marg. You're hearing, you're preaching, you're chanting, you're remembering, that's it. Right? So that's what's going on. But now if we are not on that platform where we can just sit and do that all day, we have to have activities. Now how are you going to choose your activities? Right? We're regulating and controlling our life by chanting Hare Krishna all day. Right? Discussing Bhagavatam all day. Either hearing it or telling others. And that's Bhagavat Marg. Who can do that? Except the Uttamadhikaris. Others, conditioned souls, cannot follow that. Because they have a body and a mind that they can identify with and are attached to. So now, because they're attached to it, they have to do something with it. And it's going to be something other than sitting all day and chanting Hare Krishna or hearing Bhagavatam or discussing Bhagavatam all day, all night. Not caring for the body. You know, if something comes along to eat, you know, don't, Krishna will take care of that. You don't worry about it. Right? Krishna told Madhavendra Puri. He comes to him, you're not eating? And Madhavendra says, no. He says, why? Well, nothing's come. I just take whatever comes. So this little boy says, in this village here, no one fasts. I see that they all eat. So then he gave him some milk and then disappeared. And upon inquiry about who is this kid, then nobody in the village knows him. And by the description, then they says, well, that must have been Krishna. But Krishna will take care. When he wants you to eat, you'll eat. If he doesn't want you eating, he won't eat. That's all. So in Vrindavan, wherever you're chanting, that's Vrindavan. So Krishna sees whoever's in Vrindavan eats when he wants. Right? Like that. So if one can do that, and whatever comes, fine. No, we're getting to it. This is the alap. Right? So... Yeah, so that siksha is the essential point. But because we're conditioned, we must have the diksha. But the diksha is not the essential point. Because it's external, you can see it. You know, therefore the kanistas will latch onto that so strongly. And siksha, they may or may not care. gurus told them to do something, maybe they'll do it, maybe they won't do it. But to them, that's not the essential point. No, we've joined the Orange Club, or we joined the Thread Club, you know, like that. That's the essential point. Oh, I've made it, I've become initiated. No, that's where you start. Right? So when this is understood, then this question can be answered very easily. Main problem is devotees don't understand what is initiation and what is important in initiation. Therefore, even though this point has been discussed now for the last, 10, 15 years, still no one understands it. Because it's not external and gross enough for them to grasp. It's subtle, it's philosophy, it's culture, therefore they can't understand it. So now he says you take shelter of a Siksha Guru, another Siksha Guru. And if you can't find some great Mahabhagavat, then someone who can help you. Right? And if you can't find that, Prabhupada's always there. Right? But we shouldn't be so proud that we think just on our own we will understand so many things. Because Prabhupada says you must approach the spiritual master. So we know ultimately. That is why when we follow this devotional process, so many people inspire us. So we're taking instruction from many places. Right? Though the Diksha Guru is the root. But we have so many others that we hear from and all that. And get confirmation of that with the spiritual master. Right? So then, in that case, there's no problem. Right? Either someone's been listening and has many people he has faith in, so when the spiritual master leaves, then he takes more serious shelter of the instructions of these other prominent persons in the life. If he doesn't have such prominent persons, either he hasn't had the opportunity to hear, or he has not thought it was important, then he can take shelter of Srila Prabhupada. But one should not now think he's the Diksha disciple of Srila Prabhupada. That's for fools. Siksha disciple, yes. Anyone who jumps up and down that the important thing is being a Diksha disciple of Prabhupada doesn't know the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. Is not a candidate to go to Golok Vrindavan. That mentality, generally you can keep yourself in the material world. Confirmed. Because Smartas, caste Goswamis, like that, they all like to stay in the material world. They're not overly enthusiastic to go back to Godhead, or even if they say they are, the residents of Vrindavan aren't going to take them seriously. Right? So, the point is the Siksha. So therefore, the most prominent of our Siksha gurus, they give us Diksha. It's like signing a contract. Okay, now we can speak real seriously. Before we give light, now we can speak serious. That's the meaning of the Diksha. So if the Diksha Guru is lost, what is lost is Siksha. That's the essential point. The Siksha is lost. So now one should find another Siksha Guru. Okay? Yeah. How? That connection of someone who is personally guiding you. So unless you've come to the perfectional platform, it's always good to have some guidance to make sure you're not going off the path. Right? Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not present. But Prabhupada would always sit and discuss with Sridhar Swami and other God brothers and all that philosophy and get their input and directions and things like that. So it's just like if the father's not present, then the other children in the family, they take shelter of the oldest son. So that's very common. These are natural human tendencies, culture. And this comes from Krishna's culture. So even there, one can take shelter of other god brothers, god sisters, for guidance, or like that. I mean, there's so much there. The whole point is we have to be personalists. The point is we always look at it that I'm perfect and everything outside, how it becomes. No, the problem is we're not perfect. That's where we start. Spiritual life starts from understanding I'm not perfect. Just like the spiritual master says something, we don't understand it. We think the spiritual master's made a mistake. That's the first thing we think. But it should be that spiritual master said, I don't understand it because I'm a fool. So then we ask questions to get a proper answer. Or we ask others to kindly explain it so that one can follow properly. But in this age, then everybody's generally tends to be very proud. And because of this pride, they're always right and everybody else is always wrong. So if there's a little deviation, a little this, seeming, immediately out the window. Because we set the room, right? Right? Dharma to sakshat, aham panitam, right? Isn't that how it goes? Dharma comes from me. I set the Dharma. I say what is going to do. What is the process? What is the goal? What is the relationship? No, Krishna says. Therefore, we have to use his systems. Right? Just like it would be said, Prabhupada says one must approach an Uttamadhikari. Okay, now what does Prabhupada say are the definitions of Uttamadhikari? We have to use those also. We can't say, he says Uttamadhikari, now I make my definitions for what an Uttamadhikari is. It's a package deal. So he says, see, if they engage nicely in service all day, they're able to guide you, you are inspired, these things. Very simple. Because the point is then if we're going to say, no, I understand all this, then you have to say, yes, I am something other than a Kanista. I'm at least a Madhyam. You have to be convinced of that. So if you can't give others that platform, that grace that they can be on that platform, then at least you have to be able to give yourself that grace that you are on that platform to say that they're not on that platform. Because a Kanista cannot really understand what is going on. They can only work by external symptoms. That's why it boils down to external symptoms. Someone has a sensual difficulty, then everybody says, look. But if someone has a philosophical deviation, no one notices. No one cares, even if it is there. Right? No one cares. Why? Because Kanistas don't care about those things. They're called Prakriti, means they're into material nature. I can see senses, sense objects. I can hear words and like that. I can relate with the morality because it deals with the body. It deals with the material nature. And I can set my own standards. Right? Especially from the Western. But in any case, I can set my own application of them. But the point is dharma means God sets the applications. God sets the standards. And that's higher than morality, higher than the senses. So one has to see that. That's the important thing. Like to this day, still devotees don't understand that verse where Krishna says, my devotees are, even if they have a problem, they're still saintly. You bring that up in assembly of devotees and you won't see a consensus. So you can start, you want to discuss these things, start from there. Then from that you can move into what is initiation. What is actual initiation? Because if you can't understand what is initiation, you cannot understand what is a problem in initiation. Right? If you don't know what a proper running car is, how are you going to tell what's wrong with the car if it's not running? Because you don't know what it's supposed to be doing anyway, if it is running. So as far as you're concerned, if it just sits there and makes noise or doesn't even move at all or makes no noise, it's fine. Because you don't know what it's supposed to do. So unless you understand what is initiation, how can one understand what is wrong if there's some difficulty in initiation? Impossible. So in these discussions, first discuss what is initiation. Right? Then only you can understand what to do otherwise. You can go to any school teacher around the world. They'll always teach you what is the normal, standard thing. Then after that, then they'll show you what are, you know, how you say, exceptions to the rule. Or what is bad. Right? If they show you some bad grammar, they compare it to something good. So the good is the standard. So initiation is the standard. But what is that? It was just some swaha, some, you know, bananas went into the fire, made a little smoke, made everyone cough a bit. You know? Piled up a bunch of fruit. So first define what is initiation. Then you'll see, once that is known, all these topics disappear. They evaporate. The only reason they're there now is because it's not understood. What is initiation? You understand initiation? You don't have these problems. Or if you do, you have a doubt, it's cleared in a few moments. Because you understand the process. Otherwise, you can go on talking, they're still talking. They'll go on talking for, you can still go. Anadi. You can go on forever. Right? So that's the point, is we have to educate ourselves what is correct. Right? Right? We can look at this. Why knock on the door? We can say, well, it's just the rule. Okay, but why is the rule? Because it's the proper etiquette if you go into anybody's room. So if you do that in an ordinary person's, why won't it be done in the Supreme Person's? In fact, because it's done for the Supreme Person's, that's why it's done for us. As we discussed yesterday. At first, we'll see it from our perspective. And then as we mature, we start to see it from Krishna's perspective. That's the oneness. Right? The oneness means we start to understand Krishna's mood. How Krishna likes things. We see it from Krishna's angle to please Krishna. Not that we become Krishna. That's the difference in the Gaudiya Vaishnava oneness. The oneness of purpose, oneness of mood, is not impersonal. No, it's the most personal. Because we have such affection for the person, we know the person so much, that we know what they want, and we get it done. Prabhupada says, first class disciple knows what the spiritual master was and does it without being told. Second class does it when told. Third class, you tell them they don't do it. Right? So first understand this initiation. And to do that, one must understand what is the spiritual master, what are devotees. Right? How will we even understand what's going on till we understand these Apichet Sudaracharovas? How do we know how to reject? Brahma is running after his own daughter. And then everybody just goes, "Ugh, look at this guy. Wow, forget this guy. You know, I'm out of here." You know, he's not my guru anymore. You know? You notice that, any of those conversations in the Bhagavatam? Huh? Yeah. So, huh? They avoided. Is it? Or they went up to him and told him, "My dear sir, it's not looking so good that you're doing these things. Are you remembering your position, all these different things?" Then he goes, "Oh, yes, thank you." Then he leaves that mentality. Right? And then they continue with their relationship. Everybody can make a mistake. The thing is to see if someone can correct that mistake. That's the essential point. Can we correct? That's what we're looking for. Someone can't correct, then out of necessity, naturally, we find someone else. Right? It's not that reject, useless, nonsense, this, that. No. This person has helped us so much, can't help us anymore. And if we stay attached to them, then it's sentiment. Right? There's no philosophy. The philosophy is what they've given us, we benefited. They can't take us anymore. Right? So therefore, now we have to continue. Right? That's why Krishna came. As Lord Chaitanya, that's why the Acharyas have come. That's why he's come in the form of the Bhagavatam, the holy name, to take us back. So our business is to go back. This person cannot help us. Now I will find another person. Right? One may say, "Well, why I should find this one, that one? You know, the absolute nothing ever go wrong anywhere." That's ideal. You know? But first of all, we have to establish, are we worthy? If we're so qualified, why are we still here? Since the moment we've come here, we've had the option to leave this material world. Every moment we have the option to fully surrender to the Lord. And every moment we don't take it. And we've been doing that for unlimited lifetimes. So we shouldn't be overconfident that we are so great, that we are special and wonderful and all that. No, we are just trying to become the humble servant, the servant, the servant. So we take shelter and we progress. If that person can completely take us back to Godhead, that is the best, ideal. If not, how far they can take us, and then someone else can take us from there. But whatever they've done for us, we are grateful. That is the essential point. Because gratefulness is one of the parts of intelligence. If one's not grateful, it means actually one's not very intelligent. Because intelligence is more than just memory. See, the material, modern culture, the memory, I mean knowledge is judged by Hare Krishna. May we help you. Oh. In the modern culture, intelligence is judged by memory, or how many facts and figures and knowledge that you have. Some technical knowledge or facts and figures. And that's it. You can go to be a PhD emeritus professor, Nobel Prize winner. And you don't have to get beyond that. No one expects more than that. No one expects that you have realization in your topic. Understand conclusions. Because then that's no fun. A conclusion can be said in a sentence or two. Right? But if I'm dealing just with facts and figures and knowledge and that, I can go on talking all day, all night, everything. And then if there's a conclusion, that means I have to connect everything to the conclusion. That means I'm restricted. And the mind doesn't want restriction. He just wants to float all over the universe. So in the material world today, realization, siddhanta, is not valued. Memory, you know, technical material knowledge, these are valued. Therefore, someone can't remember a shloka, oh, he can't be perfect. Because that's the material concept of perfection. You understand? So we have to see things through the right mood. We have to see things through how Krishna gives us direction, not through our own. Otherwise, there's always going to be a difficulty. It's okay. Huh? Yes? Yeah, yeah. How is that reflecting? Is someone's helping, then another helping, then another helping in the street when going back to Godhead? The point is that the person who is able to affect one's liberation, that relationship is the, you know, most prominent. Like that. But what we also have to understand is what is spiritual nature and what is material nature. See, we have a lot of faith in material nature that it's substance. But Krishna says anything that's not in relationship to me, seen in relationship to him, has no substance. Right? Isn't it? That's the second verse of the Chatur Shloki. No? Whatever you see, if it's not in relation to him, has no substance. And whatever's in relation to him has substance. That is the point. So substance means spiritual, means eternal. So if we have gained from anybody, even if it's a short time, some spiritual benefit, that is eternal. We may not see it here in this mundane time, but it's there recorded in the spiritual realm. Right? So it's there. So we also have to understand what is the definition of eternal. Because eternal does not fit into our pea brain. It can't. Only Krishna and only him can understand eternal. There's no one else other than Krishna himself who can understand eternal. Because he is the complete whole. Everybody else is a part. So you can understand your relationship with the Lord, your activities with the Lord, and what is the goal of loving the Lord. But you cannot understand the whole thing. So the principle of eternity, we cannot understand. We can get a glimpse, an idea. So therefore, if we want to understand eternal, we have to take Krishna's definition, not our own. So you'll see, all these doubts come back to our own definitions, our own ideas, our own intelligence, rather than Krishna's. So Krishna says, eternal means that which is in relationship to me. And what's not in relation to me is temporary. Bus. Very simple definition, right? This is understanding. He's God, so he understands everything. So those who are Shastra Chakshus, they see with the same vision. That's the meaning of Shastra Chakshus. That's the meaning of Tattvadarshi. Tattvadarshi also means you see the truth through the Shastras. So these are Krishna's definitions of these things. We take them or we can make up our own. But we must always remember, religion comes from God, not from us. That is the weak point in our argument. Is then we have to establish ourselves as independent authorities. So that relationship with that person is eternal. Because what has been established, the instructions that were given, the service rendered, the exchange is spiritual. It's eternal. It's always there. But we may not be able to continue taking advantage because we're not on the transcendental platform. Therefore, we have to contact someone else who can take us farther in our realization. What we did was eternal. You came in, you offered a flower at Krishna's feet. That's eternal. It's transcendental. But we didn't understand it. Krishna accepts it. So in his books, it's eternal. But because we're conditioned, we can't see with that vision. Therefore, we need help to get to that point. And because Krishna is there to tell us, he's in our heart. Right? He's in our heart. But we can't hear, so we need someone outside. So Krishna sends us somebody from outside. And then Krishna says how you deal with that person, because they are representing him. So now, it's just a matter of if we accept that, or if we want to set our own standards. I can't be that guy. I grew up with that guy. You know, he was doing this and that and all that, and now he's Shakshat Hari. Forget it. I know the guy. I knew when he used to, you know, hide Halava in the closet, you know, after the Sunday feast, and, you know. Bhaktisiddhanta gives the example of the, what do you call it? The one story that when the mother was young, she was going naked. That doesn't mean that now when she grows up that she still runs around naked. So in the same way, people mature. People have realization. So therefore we have to... Yes?
Maharaj, you were talking about the disciple anticipating the desire of the spiritual master in doing. So those really close associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like Sarup Damodar, Ramananda Roy, how was it that they would be so in tune with his mood and what he was feeling that they could sing exactly the appropriate song to enhance and bring out those feelings, reinforce those moods of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Was it because, you know, they're actually, as his close associates followers, that much in tune, or is it also that he's inspiring from within as the Supreme Lord simultaneously? Because sometimes he hasn't expressed even externally something, and already they're singing exactly the right verse from Gita Govinda or whatever to just enhance that mood. So how is such a close reciprocation possible? Is it by the affinity of the disciple or follower, or is it also some degree of empowerment from the Lord?
The empowerment is there because Krishna sees the sincerity. And so therefore he'll guide. But generally we see that he may directly guide or he does it through his yoga maya. Like that. So depending upon the kind of pastimes, then he will take the prominence or a yoga maya will do. It just depends upon what is his mood. But the point is he's there, he'll inspire. That's there. At the same time, as if for the pastime nobody understands, then Yogamaya also arranges it like that. You know? Because it's by the Lord's grace they understand. But sometimes they don't. Like you see, even Krishna means Balaram can understand anything that's happening from himself to Mathura, to Dwarka, to Ayodhya, to Vaikuntha, to the Purusha avatars, down to the, you know, to the Indragopa germ in the unlimited universes, he can understand. But what Krishna does, he cannot understand, unless Krishna wants him to understand. You see, many, many times like this, like when all the cowherd boys and calves were taken by Lord Brahma, 1 year elapsed And after some time, then Lord Balaram, he didn't know what had happened, because Krishna himself had personally expanded. And then after a while, he started to think, what's going on here? You know, everybody's dealing with these cows and calves. I mean, with these calves and cowherd boys, just like they deal with Krishna. So then at that time, he went up to Krishna, hey, what's going on? Because he can't understand. Like that. So if Krishna wants, you understand. If Krishna doesn't want, you don't understand. Like that. So like that, many pastimes are there.
So it's also according primarily to the requirement of the Lord, his own requirement for enjoyment.
Yeah, whatever is his mood at the time. You know, if he wants everybody to understand or not understand, then, you know, like that, he has fun that way. And because they're completely surrendered, then whatever he does doesn't bother them. They don't reject him. Like Krishna comes, Krishna arranges. Mother Jashoda is going to send a box of all kinds of wonderful jewels and clothing and scents and everything to Srimati Radharani. Wonderful, nice box. Big box. You know? Because in India before, they didn't have these metal almirahs. They had these like trunks. And you would keep things in these trunks. Like that. Because they can be moved around and much, very practical. So she was preparing one trunk and Krishna came in, oh, what are you doing? Like that. And she said, oh, don't worry about it. You know? And Krishna, no, I want to know, You know? Like that. So then she tells him. Like that. This is all for Radharani, because she comes every day, cooks so nicely, she's just a nice girl, and takes helps in the house, so she wanted to send her something as a gift of appreciation. So then, then the goldsmith comes, and wants to speak to Mother Jashoda, because he's got some new gold ornaments he's just made for Krishna, means she had ordered, and he is making. So they've come, so she wants to check them to see if they're up to the standard. So she steps out of the room for a minute. Right? So she's finished packing the box. It's ready to go. So then Krishna calls Dhanishta, because she's like the in charge of the running of the house. And Dhanishta comes, and Krishna takes everything out of the box and says, please arrange that this goes to Srimati Radharani. And after she takes all the stuff, then he gets into the box and closes the lid. Then, after some time, then Abhimanyu, Radharani's so-called husband, shows up at the house because he's been called. And Mother Jashoda tells him that we have this nice box of all kinds of nice wealth and all different kinds of things that she says that tell Srimati Radharani, because of my affection, I'm sending you the contents of this box. And, you know, you should enjoy these contents, you should keep them on your body, you should, you know, keep them close to you, and in this way, enjoy the contents of this box. Right? Because in her mind, it's all saris and scents and ornaments and things that you keep on the body. Right? So Abhimanyu is just thinking, wow, must be, I mean, they're the king and queen of Vrindavan, so there must be some nice wealth, and he's always very greedy for wealth. Like that, Abhimanyu. Him, Jatila, Kotila, they're always thinking how to increase their wealth. So they're always hanging out with that, what's that other, Gopa? You know? He's the third main leader of the Gopas. You have Nanda Maharaj, you have Rishabhanu, that's another, like, group, Gana, and then you have this other one, the third one. And Abhimanyu is in that group. So it seems to be the third group is all the kind of the losers, right? So then, can't remember his name. So then he picks this up, great difficulty, puts it on his head, and it's very heavy. But he doesn't mind because he's thinking so much wealth must be inside. So with great difficulty, he carries this from Nandagaon all the way to Yavat. To his house. It's not a small distance. You know? And then he gets there and he brings it and puts it, you know, comes into the house and Jatila comes out and, what is this? You know? And then, you know, he puts the box down and says, oh, this is wealth for Srimati Radharani and all this sent by Mother Jashoda. And she said that, you know, this is sent out of her affection, and the contents of this box she should keep close to herself and enjoy, and like this. So then Jatila was very, very happy about this. She thought, oh, so much more wealth is there. Because naturally, whatever wealth the wife has, she will also share and this and that. So many things. She's very excited. So she calls servants and all that, and they bring this and take it inside. No, I think Abhimanyu himself carries it inside. Inside the inner quarters, inner chambers, where Radharani is with all her maidservants. You know, the Astasaki and the maidservants and all that. So he comes in and puts it down on the table in a prominent place. And then says that Mother Jashoda has sent this, and it's, you know, and your mother, and she said that you must enjoy the contents of this box and keep it very close to you and all these things. And so this is the order from the Queen of Vrindavan, and I've told this to your mother, she also, and I as your husband also tell you like this, so this is your duty. And so then he leaves, right? So then the gopis are all sitting there wondering what's going on, because they were all starting to get twitches in the left side of their body, something very auspicious, and there's a very unique mood in the air and all that. So then, you know, because it's the inner chambers, so they're not dressed so well. They're just wearing very simple and not very nicely dressed. So they're sitting there and discussing, you know, what is this box? What's going on here, you know? I mean, boxes have come and gone, but, you know, we don't get these kind of moods. There's something here. So then they go to open the box, and out pops Krishna, right? And so then Krishna pops out, and then naturally they all get angry because, you know, they're inside, they're not dressed properly. And he's here, there's supposed to be so much wealth inside, and, you know, Krishna pops out of the box, right? Yeah. So then Krishna smiles very much, you know? He's very happy at this thing, you know, at this trick he's done, you know? He's just got Abhimanyu, right? Radharani's husband, to carry him all the way from Nandagaon up to here. And not only that, carry her right into Radharani's room. Not only that, he gives the order personally that he must enjoy whatever's in the box. So then Krishna says, okay, here I am. I'm the contents of the box. You know, where's the, you know, you're supposed to, you know, you heard the order of, you know, all your superiors. And the gopis are very, very upset and all this kind of thing. So now, one could look at this, that Krishna's very devious, very nonsense, not following the principles very properly, the dharma, and all that. And one can think, what's going on here? And then they could, at this point, reject Krishna. No, but because they like him so much as a person. Then, even he does these things, it makes them upset. But even that upset pleases Krishna. He wanted to do something really funny and very clever and get them upset. And it makes him happy. So if that makes him happy, they're happy. Right? But because he wants to see them upset, they take that mood. Like that. Because that's what he wants to enjoy, so they get upset. So like that. So it's a matter of affection. So one has to be able to see things always in connection with Krishna. That's the meaning of our philosophy. Whatever's happening, just like Prabhupada was sitting in Calcutta, the bombs are dropping on Calcutta. He could be thinking, nonsense Japanese, you know, what is this? Bharat Varsh, you know, meant for the kings, and who are these, you know, Malechas, and, you know, and all this coming, and all these kind of things. So he just says, it's Krishna. This bombs, that power, the fear, whatever is there, that's Krishna. But it's not a very lovable form of Krishna, but it is Krishna. Like that. So he sees it in relationship to Krishna. So whatever is there. So whatever is happening, we have to see it in relationship to Krishna. Then it becomes very, very nice. Otherwise, how are we going to get in this door? We have to knock on the door, and after taking blessing of the spiritual master, get in the door. You know? Because without that connection, Krishna doesn't recognize us. Unless we've accepted a superior authority, Krishna is not going to accept us. It means we're his parts and parcels. He naturally accepts everybody. But he can't accept to enter into a rasa with us of any intimacy unless we are very personal ourselves and are willing to accept Krishna as a person. Right? Therefore, as I said, if we don't want to accept that Krishna can do all these things, fine. But you have to accept the supreme authority. Therefore, accept God in his Vaikuntha form. He doesn't do any of these things. Never does anything imperfect. Ramachandra never did one thing wrong. Morally, perfect. Not only that, the perfect king. Kings can take how many wives they want. He only took one. Right? They may say so many things for political reasons, but Ramachandra has one word. He says it, that's what happens. Right? And they may shoot so many arrows and this and that and fighting and enjoying their chivalryness. No. Ramachandra, one arrow. He's going to kill you. He shoots one arrow. You're dead. Finished. One word, one wife, one arrow. That's his motto. He doesn't do anything wrong. So like that, you have to worship these aspects of Krishna. And then with that, then the guru will Krishna will be represented through a guru who has similar manifestation. Means formality. Not that gurus serving under Krishna then are immoral. No, that intimacy is allowed. While those gurus who are not, then it's very formal. Always formal. Like that. So we have to understand these things. Then, by knocking on the door, it has some meaning. Then Krishna wants to know who it is. You've identified yourself as the servant of your spiritual master. And Krishna is then wanting to see, who is this? He's willing to accept us. But if we come and knock on the door, and we have no allegiance to anybody, except our own intelligence, Krishna is not overly interested to see whoever is knocking on the door. Because Krishna is the reservoir of intelligence. So why should he care for ours? Unless it's imbued with devotion, and specifically devotion to the devotees. Krishna is not interested. So we've come a very large full circle. Yes.
Maharaj, I think there's that idea, judging from Prabhu's question, is that if, you know, the spiritual master is the one who vouches for you or introduces you to Krishna and establishes that connection, that if somehow the Diksha Guru is gone or something's happened, then you're almost in a kind of spiritual limbo, so to speak. So, or maybe at least until there's another senior Vaishnav who again can give you the shiksha and explain the shiksha in clear misgiving. So, what would you say about that? In other words, if somebody was in a situation of something fairly recent, but he's still doing deity worship, so then his mentality should be that ultimately I'm looking at my connection with Prabhupada like that and
yes,
carry on. And not that he should feel, oh, now I'm just in limbo and all.
No. No, the point is once one is surrendered to Krishna's movement, one is never in limbo. Like that. One is always being taken care of. But we have to be able to, you know, we have to be able to maintain properly our mentality. You know, we have to be able to apply what we've learned. You know, so it's we're never left like that. We're never left. Point is Krishna is not going to leave us unless we offend the devotees. Then Krishna will leave us, because Krishna has been so kind to bring you in contact with the pure Vaishnavas, and then you offend them, the preachers. And then you offend the preachers. Then Krishna's not going to let you come in contact with them again for millions of lifetimes. Because they're the most dear. Krishna says, one who preaches this philosophy to the devotees is the most dear. So if you offend those preachers, that's the worst offense. And Krishna's not going to let you come in contact with them again for a long time. Right? You have difficulties, you have weaknesses, all these things, that's understood. We've been in the material world a long time. We have bad habits. Habit means something you do without thinking. Because you've done it so many times, now you just do it without thinking. You're expert at it. So we're expert at eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. We've been doing it in every lifetime we've ever been in every species, in every planetary system, like that. So it's just by habit, all these things happen. So it's understood. If there's weaknesses there, that's okay. But when there's philosophical, that'll destroy everything. And when there's offenses, that'll destroy everything. Like that. So one has to be very, very careful of that. Has to be very careful.
So if one loses Shiksha, then those things can creep in very easily.
Very easily. That's the point, is that, see, if we establish that our relationships are based on siksha with the senior devotees, right? It's always that, oh, you know, the brahmacharis, we can't wash the spiritual master's kopans, and, you know, stuff like that, you know? That's not the point. The personal service of the worship of the Vapu, that's not the most important. It's nice. The most important is the vani, the instruction. So the best thing of proximity is to be able to hear the instructions. And then, whatever one can, render service. But even if it's not personally to them, if it's just service within the mission, under their direction, that is service for Guru. Right? Like Prabhupada tells someone to go somewhere and open a temple. They open that temple. That's directly service for Prabhupada. Right? It's not that only if they're ironing his clothes or directly cooking for him or serving him prasadam or massaging his feet, then that is service and anything else is not. That's also very nice. Great mercy. Very special. But whatever service one does, if it's under the direction, under the blessings, then it's fine. That is service. So when that is understood, then we can start properly associating with devotees. So those instructions, if that we understand that the instructions are the most important, then wherever we can get nice instructions, we appreciate that. Rather than, okay, here's the guru, that's it, finished, I don't listen to anybody else. No, we appreciate. Then we'll have a very broad spectrum of instructions. Though we do understand where the root is. That's always important. So it's to the parampara, through our guru, through Prabhupada. So if that guru is missing, still we have the instructions of Prabhupada and the parampara. But now we need someone to specifically guide us to make sure that we're understanding these properly. So therefore, we take shelter of somebody who's present. Even if the spiritual master has left, right? He's no longer physically present. it's always recommended that one take shelter of other advanced devotees. Rupa Goswami says one should enhance one's spiritual life by associating with those who are more advanced than you. He doesn't say, that means only your spiritual master, and after he goes, then it doesn't matter. No, this means that all time, all places, all circumstances. Always try to find someone more advanced and associate with them. So the same process is always going on. You're always taking advantage of the example of others, either by their directions or by their example or both. That's always going on. So one's always looking for that kind of direction. So if one is always looking for that, that's understood, every devotee understands that, then they also won't have as much difficulty if the spiritual master leaves. Because they'll already have so many that they have connection with. Otherwise now it's like, oh, I like, you know, these four or five different preachers, but now I took diksha from this one, now I don't even care for the other four. But then it would be understood. He's still, this one's lectures, this one's kirtan, this one's example, this one's this, this one's so many things. There'll be inspiration from all different directions. So of course, there'll be a natural, disappointment, you know, because a relationship is a relationship. So feelings will be hurt. But spiritual life will continue. Does that seem to? Mm. Yeah. So we'll end here because it's late and it is raining. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.